Podium Audio presents Bigger, Better, Badder, WrestleMania 3 and the Year It All Changed. Written by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Performed by Michael Bauer. Chapter 1.
I never thought it could be done, Gorilla Monsoon!
With screams pouring down the canyons of the Pontiac Silverdome, Jesse the Body Ventura's words lanced the speakers of television sets around the pay-per-view universe. The villainous color commentator seemed to truly be in awe of the feat that just occurred. His voice rose above the strains of Hulk Hogan's theme music, Real American, and the roar of the announced 93,173 in attendance, a number that would take on a mythology all its own. He was referencing the Hulkster, retaining his World Wrestling Federation, WWF, World Heavyweight Championship, after body slamming and dropping a big leg on Andre the Giant. But in truth, Ventura's sense of wonder was directed less at what had transpired in the ring than the overall spectacle he'd witnessed. Anyone who'd been around the wrestling business understood that the eighth wonder of the world, as the French Leviathan was known, had been hoisted up and driven into the mat before. Yet, according to the rhetoric fans had been hearing on TV in the weeks leading up to WrestleMania 3, the act was unprecedented. Not unlike a wrestling extravaganza selling out an NFL stadium, major licensees and sponsors aligning themselves with the grunt and groan circuit. And, 11 years later, Ventura, a man who made his name wearing feather boas and flexing his brawny arms while declaring, "Win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat," being elected the 38th governor of the great state of Minnesota.
"Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan in the main event, that's all you really needed," explained Jim J.R. Ross, an Oklahoma-bred announcer then 6 years away from launching the most memorable portion of his Hall of Fame career with the WWF. The company that would later be called and periodically referred to in this book as World Wrestling Entertainment, or WWE. "Hogan was the ultimate hero. Andre had an amazing legacy, and everybody knew the end was getting closer for him. And you had manager Bobby the Brain Heenan cutting the promos or doing all the talking for Andre, and that sealed the deal. You couldn't get a more intriguing main event than Hogan and Andre."
For a few years before the event, Vincent Kennedy McMahon had been hiring away the most gifted talent from the dozen-plus territories or carefully delineated wrestling outfits around North America, ignoring time-honored agreements to confine activities to a specific region.
"Every promoter had their own part of the country," said Jerry Briscoe, who'd held dozens of regional championships and owned portions of the Florida and Georgia territories before switching to the WWF and becoming a talent scout for the organization. "When an outlaw came in and tried to run your city, all the other promoters would share their best wrestlers with you, so the other guy couldn't really compete."
The proceedings in Michigan changed the dynamic. After all, who were you going to import to shift interest away from Hogan and Andre?
"That was the big one that separated everything," Briscoe continued, "and kind of put an end to the territories."
With a few notable exceptions, in their place would be Vince McMahon and his tailor-made suit and colored vest, his fist raised defiantly in the air. He hadn't gotten to this point simply by swiping wrestlers, arenas, and TV slots from the other promoters. In the 1980s, McMahon began bringing in A-list celebrities to supplement cards and attract a new audience. Competitors howled, screaming that the sometimes cartoonish presentations would expose and ultimately kill the business. At the same time, elitists viewed the phenomenon with haughty disdain. Can you imagine the level of a mind that watches wrestling? Max von Sydow's character asked in Woody Allen's Hannah and Her Sisters in 1986. Surely this whole thing was a fad and would soon go the way of the mood ring and CB radio. WrestleMania 3 held on an overcast afternoon in early spring 1987, obliterated the cynicism.
"We get to the big empty stadium and I'm thinking, wow, what's this place going to look like?"
said B. Brian Blair, whose tag team, the Killer Bees, wrestled the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov just prior to the main event.
"And they had a section high up for the spouses to